doesn't partake of something else, but let's continue the remarks.
So we were discussing why it is, number one, that the Kinnan Dvarim B'Alma Sugyas revolve around the case of Kinnan Sudar mostly, with a little bit of with a little bit of participation of Shtar, which turns out to be a very consistent factor as well, and why in some of the kind of, pretty amorphous cases like Etain, we find like a suggestion by the Magid Mishnah in Hilchos Bechira that there would be a difference even between Shtar and Kinyan Sudar. So we've been discussing the idea, and again we even find, that the cases which apparently work, which on the surface seem to be good candidates and therefore problematic in terms of the problem of Kinyan Dvarim B'Alma, that they too almost are all cases of Kinyan Dvarim B'Alma. So what we have been discussing is two things. Number one, just on a practical level, even if there's no conceptual difference between, or more fundamental difference between the modes of Kinyanim, or at least Kinyan Sudar and other things, the objective fact that Kinyan Sudar is not a mice of the Guf HaDavar, already is, a partial explanation for its distinctiveness. Because the more you have a mice of a Guf HaDavar, so you have to, obviously that's inherently a more concrete kind of a kinyan. That's already a more concrete kind of a kinyan. We have to get back to the little thing there. I think I charged it, so. Well, maybe next we'll try on Monday. So the more we speak about a concrete kinyan, the more difficult it is to apply to something which is in general, either not katsuv or lo bali olam, and in this case devarim, just physically needs to attach, to some, one would think at least that's a partial explanation. But obviously, the bigger idea that we've been pursuing is the idea that has strong echoes in Rishonim and definitely in the Achronim, and something that Reb Chaim certainly felt very, very strong about, and that is the possibility that Kinyan Sudar is a totally different type of Kinyan, and that it focuses on Gemiras Das. It's not just that it happens to be a Kinyan, that is not the Guf HaDavar, but it's not that kind of a Kinyan at all. And to explain this a little bit better, of course, it does bring us into the question of the role of Das and Kavana in Kinyanim generally, and that, of course, is a massive topic. Avrami asked me a little bit about it after this year, I think in connection to something that Noam had said as well. So I just want to clarify that for a minute. I'm not going to clarify the topic because in a bigger way, because that takes too much time. But obviously, the relationship between, in all Kinyanim, between the Maisa Kinyan, the objective action that you do, and the state of mind that you have, and the level of intention and commitment, that is a massive, it's predictable that that would be in any legal system a fundamental core question about transactions, about how to accomplish transactions, the relationship between your mindset, your intention, let's say the level of commitment. And there, of course, the issues that we've been discussing are really, front and center. Meaning, I'm saying that I'm going to do something is different than making a promise, which is different, than making a legal commitment, which is different than a legal commitment that also attaches itself or adheres, to something, in the present, whether it's state of mind or some sort of a backup obligation like Shibudin, but beginning with Shibud Aguf and then going to Shibud Nechasin. Obviously, all those things, and then the concrete objectification of what it is that I'm committing to. Like I do a symbolic action that actually, expresses or captures, at least symbolically, if not concretely, you know, the what I'm doing. So that obviously strengthens the state of mind, you know, and it reinforces it, and I say it gives it an objective expression. But it also, intensifies it, and it also, in its own right, has a certain value and a certain, you know, power. So the question of, like, how much Ratzon Das, how much Haskama Ratzon Das, Das Machne Das Amiskayev, I'll explain in a minute, however you want to, the gradations of, you know, levels of your intention and your seriousness, and how much, what you're doing, you know, really in its own right kind of causes this change, that's a question for any legal system to grapple with, and something, a system like the halakha in particular, which is, you know, where actions really, where intention is such a dominant, you know, principle, but also where symbolic, physical concretization of those, you know, inactions is such a, you know, fundamental part of the, you know, core system. I mean, again, we're in the middle of Hanukkah, and, you know, the whole idea of Hanukkah really is, the struggle to maintain, you know, connection to the performance of Maisa Mitzvos. Right? And this is, of course, the ha'ara of, you know, the Bach and the, you know, the Lavush and the Maral and others about the difference between, you know, Purim and Hanukkah. And, you know, if you read the Rambam's description, expansive description beyond, you know, the simple sources, and that's why everybody scrambles, you know, to find them, to find sources for it, you know, Ratzu Levatel Datam, you know, Shelo Yasku B'Toro B'Mitzvos. So, I mean, the whole idea of, I've spoken about this in years past, but, you know, just being able to say, you know, in a kind of Shas Hashmad, you know, just say about Mitzvos Kalos, Yavor, you know, the Al Yehareg, you know, which is the norm, that's usually how we paskin, but not in Shas Hashmad. So in Shas Hashmad, we say Yehareg V'Yavor, even on a Mitzvah, you know, Kala, you know, Filu Ka'arkasa, the Masana, as the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Daled, and the Rambam codifies in Perakei Chosodei Torah. And the reason for that is because there's this, you know, recognition that Yahadus really stands and falls on, you know, not just good intentions. If you don't have good intentions, then you're misasek and things that you do, then that's totally meaningless, obviously. It's even less than mitzvos anashim, you know, melumada. But, you know, if you do have great intentions, you know, but you don't have any physical outlet for them, any way to manifest them in a more objective, concrete way, that's also totally, you know, unacceptable. And, you know, I like to always point out that I think part of the symbol of the mezuzah, you know, and assuming that it isn't just a, you know, marker and a discussion, you know, whether the Hanukkah goes on one side and the mezuzah goes on the other, but it's something more fundamental, which I think it certainly is for the Rambam, and it is for the Sefer HaManig and others. Sefer HaManig says that, you know, you shouldn't light in a Beis HaKnesses because it's not a makom, you know, chayav b'mezuzah, which sounds like, you know, being ro'i l'mezuzah is an important factor. It relates to some of the things I spoke about the other night, but even, you know, beyond that, like, what's the mezuzah connection? You know, and I think it's because the parshios of the mezuzah are Shema and Vayim Shema. They're Kabbalas O Malchus Shemayim, and they're Kabbalas O Mitzvos. And the idea that you can't have one without the other, and, you know, the relationship between Shema and Vayim Shema is fascinating, of course. There's so much overlap, but, you know, you have the, you know, Lashon Yachid and Lashon Rabin, how it's written in a mezuzah, big issue, all stumos or psuchos, you know, as opposed to how it's written in the Torah. I don't want to get into the whole thing, but the bigger idea that I'm trying to get from this is that, you know, the part of the story of Hanukkah is the inability of Klal Yisrael in a Shas Hashmad, you know, to spiritually survive, because the need to outlet, you know, the physical, concrete, you know, as an expression of the commitment and of the idea. But that's true, and that's what's singular about Yahadus in general. And that translates itself even in Chol Shem Mishpat. So the idea that on the one hand there's a mental commitment, there's a mindset, there's a, you know, on the one hand, and at the same time, like, we, you know, heavily emphasize, you know, the Maisa Kinyan, the Tzura of what you're doing, and that, you know, again, so then, you know, how it actually plays out, you know, where you draw the line becomes very important. Like, what's more important, the Maisa Kinyan or the Das? You know, you could say everything is an expression of Das practically, but you need to objectify, you know, what it is and concretize what you're doing as a, you know, as a way of reinforcing it or giving it greater depth or objectivity, etc. Or you could say the opposite. You know, namely the symbolic embodiment of what you're doing in Meshicha or Hagba'a or Mesira or Chazaka, you know, or Kesef in a totally different way, you know, in terms of value, exchange, barter, Chalipin, you know, in the barter sense, if that's what you were talking about, you know, Chalipe Shaba B'Shaba, let's say. You know, that really does it, but of course, you know, not if it's mindless or if it's misasek or you don't mean it. So, you know, it has to also mean something to you. But what's doing the heavy lifting? Is it the, you know, the mental part or the physical part? So this is a huge, huge topic. And, you know, a lot of things depend on it. You know, how much das do you really need when you do a normal Maisa Kinyan? The question of katan and the presence of a das acheres makne. And, you know, doing a Maisa Kinyan b'sada shel hefker, let's say, without a das makne, but, you know, like, what does that do for you? The discussion of the Raibid in Cheskes Abatim and Dafnin Beis, the Kotin discussion, of course, is a discussion of Balitosis all over the place, and Gittin, and Basra, and Kiddushin. So the question of how much Das, how much, you know, Maisa, is a very important question. And there are different views in the Rishonim and in the Poskim. It's also very, very reasonable, this is where we get back to our topic, after a little digression, but hopefully a relevant one. It's very, you know, suggestive to say that different kinyanim reflect different emphases exactly in this issue, that there are some kinyanim that are where the heavy lifting is really done by the symbolic, you know, action, the meshicha, the hagba, as I say, the, you know, you know, again, doing that in a physical way, like being moshech and bringing a chepetz into your rishus, you know, again, where the not bal korcha, the makna chalila, that's called gezel, that doesn't have any meaning, and not with, you know, misasek of the kodek, because then it would just be an empty, you know, gesture. But with everybody understanding and agreeing what, you know, what it means, but to actually transfer the object, you know, required, you know, being done mostly by the physical, by, of course, what you impute to be the importance of this symbolic physical action, whether it's Hagbah or Meshicha and so on. You know, that's very reasonable. There are other kinyanim, you know, where you're not really physically bringing the object into a Yerushas at all. And of course, Kinyan Sudar, you know, prominent among them. But also, and this, I think Akiva mentioned to me the other day, we're talking about, Agav is another example. It doesn't have to be identical, right? But there is a lot of, you know, a lot of parallel. Even things like, you know, there's a difference between, you know, like Mesira and Hagbah and Meshicha. And there's a difference between Chazaka, which we'll get back to very soon, but we discussed it last year in Pesachim. We're just going to review that hopefully on Monday when we pick up with the you know, the Chazaka and the Chalukah Shirkus side of it. There's a Horoz Bailus like element, you know, in let's say Chazaka, which I'll explain, but those who were here last year certainly know what I'm talking about. Like, you know, where the symbol isn't so much of taking the object into your possession, especially talking about Karka, can't move Karka. It's, you know, acting like an owner. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the year. We talked about cheskas tashmishin, you know, not just being like a commitment not to prosecute, but being an actual kinyan, or even cheskas nezakin, you know, where the other person, you know, it's kind of you're kind of negating, you know, that part of your sovereignty, you know, by allowing him, you know, what otherwise would have been a violation of that sovereignty. So different kinyanim just work in different ways, and that obviously explains a lot, and this is a massive middle above a Basra issue, because this is where a lot of these issues, Mishicha and Agba'a and Masmisira and of course Chazaka, you know, get played out. So the details, whether you know you can make a kinyan in a neutral territory or dafka, you know, when you're bringing the object into your physical, you know, rishus, all the details of the kinyanim have a lot to do with this question. So they can call them the symbolic kinyanim themselves are still different in terms of what they emphasize. Kesef is a great example, of course. I mean, mo'os and kesef. Kesef is a more symbolic mo'os, you know, but the idea that, you know, what I'm not doing anything, I'm not bringing the chevetz into my rishus, okay, but what I am doing is exchanging for it, right? And that's an exchange of value. Barter is a kinyan, kalipin shava b'shava, we'll call it, you know, where I'm not exchanging value, but I am exchanging, bartering, that's what barter means, bartering objects. So it's the, you know, it's either the equal value or the, you know, the mutual exchange. That's still very different than drawing something from your rishus into my rishus, or from rishus harabim into my rishus, or horos bailos. So what I'm trying to emphasize is that the modes of kinyanim are quite different from each other. And, you know, kinyan sudar in that respect stands out. Everybody agrees that you need, you know, you can't, you know, acquire something bal korcha, you know, in kinyanim. And most agree that, you know, if you're completely misasik, then what you're doing is also insignificant. But how much, you know, das, commitment, the level of das that you need to commit, that is extremely open to question. And the idea that then you would distinguish between different modes of kinyanim is also extremely reasonable, as are other distinctions. And, you know, we're going to pursue it with kinyan sudar because that's a very big extreme, but... even situations like whether you can split the kavana, you know, for the kinyan, you know, in terms of kavana lemaisa kinyan or kavana lechalosa kinyan, is a very significant, like, argument. Like, you know, the Gemara has discussions like, you know, nafal ala chepet. Let's say you think that, you know, either seeing the chepets or you know, lying on top of the chepets, you know, is a kinyan. Or you have a intention of kinyan, you know, but it isn't. Right? Well, again, motse might be a different story in an aveda, but yeah. But let's say you have intention to acquire, you know, a chepetz through mode, what you think is, you know, one mode, and the halacha, you know, doesn't recognize that, you know. But you happen, like, you know, agav to do a real kinyan. Like, you do a meshicha, but you're not focusing on acquiring the object through meshicha. Maybe you don't even know that it works. You know, you think you're acquiring it through habata, or through nefila. So that's a big machlokas rishonim, beginning of a metzia, elsewhere. You know, that's considered to be das l'kinyan. Now, you have kabana l'chalos l'kinyan, like, you want to, you know, acquire this object, you know, but you're not, you know, connecting that kavana to the actual maisa kinyan. So, if it's about misasek, maybe that doesn't work. If it's about, I mean, the kinyan needs to give, you know, stature to the action, or just, you know, you can't be kodah something unless you want to acquire it. So, there are many, many issues connected with this question of the relationship, level of das you need, and the relationship of that das to the Maisa Kinyan. And the idea that different Kinyanim work in different ways is of course, very, very suggestive. That's why there are such myriad of details and differences, and that's what we need to look at. So when it comes to Kinyan Sudar, which represents a certain pole, you know, in this whole, you know, massive structure, and the fact that it is like the ubiquitous Kinyan, and Stam Kinyan means Kinyan Sudar, and it applies to both, and it's not an either all the things that we've discussed so far, and it's, you know, a Kona B'Kliyafa P'Shem Boshava Puta, you know, if that isn't just because a Kli is always a Davar Shel Shovi, so, you know, you put it all together, you know, the possibility that, you know, if you want to be moderate about it and perceive Kinyanim, Kinyan Sudar is like part of the regular club mostly, so then you'll attribute all discrepancies, you know, only to the physical differences, the fact that it's not the Maitse Kinyan Beguf Adav. And then, you know, you should say the same thing about other things, like Agav, if it isn't Midin Tziburin, you know, physically or intellectually, and other things, you know, too, like Situmta, and so on. However, you know, if you think the evidence is more compelling, then the idea that, oh, whatever you want to say about other Kinyanim, this just works very differently. I mean, other Kinyanim don't work through pure commitment, and this does work, you have to say both, through pure commitment. But then the idea that you require a higher level of commitment, and that there are people who, like Tani, would say, who can accomplish other Kinyanim, but they can't accomplish this Kinyan, they can't muster a Kinyan that is, you know, completely, you know, rooted or anchored in the commitment level. You need, that's another way of saying, for other Kinyanim, you need askama, or you need ratzon. Here you need das, or das, not just das makne, but das amaschayev, you know. That becomes very reasonable. And the idea that, you know, then there are going to be limitations in Kinyan Sudar by virtue of the physical limitation, but even more of this conceptual, you know, difference. But there are also, at the same time, going to be, you know, expansive applications of Kinyan Sudar, you know, including the fact, you know, that it is Bein B'Metaltelin, Bein B'Karka. And then, you know, to try to test it, what about, you know, in areas of Devarim and so on. And the idea that both of those things could be true at the same time, namely that it's, you know, there are Kulas and Chubras, that's always a testament to either the fact that there are different factors responsible for each, you know, one may be because of the physical things, another because of the, you know, the nature of it, or that it's just, it's not hot, it's not better, it's not worse, it's just different, and things that are different, you know, typically are you know, expressed, you know, in both directions. And that's certainly what we have in Kinyan Sudar. So what we've done so far is, and of course how this all relates to Kinyan Dvarim is exactly it. In other words, the more we focus in Kinyan Sudar, not just on the absence of physical Maisa Beguf HaDavar, which helps a lot anyway, but we're also on the idea that this is a mode of Kinyan that works through the depth of your, you know, pure legal commitment, the more understandable it is that, you know, that things that are on the border, you know, where you're not so much transferring a cheftza, or you're not relating to a cheftza or an exchange so much, but you're talking about a legal commitment as opposed to simply a promise or an, you know, an intent, you know, of action, that's going to be more easily accomplished through Kinyan Sudar. So we discussed already, you know, Rav and Levi. I did want to bring in, I think I didn't mention yet, but I told you to look at the Rimigash, because I think he is the closest to, you know, to number one, kind of acknowledging and being sensitive, even in the case of Rav, meaning Caleb Shel Kona, that very verbose formulation in the Gemara, you know, is conveying something, And I don't know if he says this idea fully, but he might be saying it fully, or you know, he's stopping short a little bit, but he is highlighting certainly some interesting characteristics of Kinyan Sudar, and again, the impact on Rambam, who clearly, you know, treats, you know, Kinyan Sudar in very singular way, you know, throughout the whole Perikei of Hilchos Mechira, I think is pretty clear. So let's see, have somebody, Akiva? You have it? You have the Raivin and the Rinigash and the Tshuva? Just to get it on the record? Yeah. It's a Tshuva, right? Yeah. Yeah, so it's just a very interesting piece, right, about, you know, what it takes, you know, to accomplish, you know, a transfer of ownership. And just to make it clear, the whole issue of transfer of ownership in general, you know, is I think built on another very important principle that is implicit in the halakha, and that is, you know, the concept, the bailus, the idea of, you know, sovereign ownership. Because we take that very, very seriously. Of course, again, ownership will express itself differently in karka than in taplin. We'll get to chesk sabbat and dishes. The next man will talk about that, because of karka li olam omades, and therefore, as opposed to metaltalin, you can destroy it, you can move it, you can, you know, dictate its fate. Is that just a coincidental difference or something more fundamental? But the whole point is that the more you look at ownership as something concrete and real, you know, as opposed to just like, oh, like a little bit of a legal relationship that gives you more, you know, more of a connection and more rights. So, like, how do you... You need, obviously, something more formidable to move it out. And I think the Rinnegash is emphasizing that. Right? To exchange, to get, you know, Chepetz A or Karka A into, you know, somebody else's Rishus, you know, requires... You know, that, you know, there be full ratzon and like a real act of siluk, right? That's what he's saying? Yeah, go ahead. So, from a das point of view, it's hard to see the incentive, right? In this teeny little exchange, which isn't really the value of, or the actual exchange for the object. Correct? Bad. Right. I mean, and typically, even in a case of Kinyan Sudar, and this is interesting if the Rinnegash brings this up, because it doesn't have to be that way at all, but it probably is typically true. In other words, when I make a Kinyan Sudar on a piece of karka, or on a watch, or whatever it is, right? I can do that as a matana, but you know, there's no requirement that I also pay you full value, right? Unless that's the agreement between us. But what he's saying is typically, you know, that is what's going to take place. So if that's typically what's going to take place, then, you know, isn't the, you know, matana muetas that you're getting, you know, in Kalev Shalkona, you know, kind of superfluous? Like, what does it even do? Right? Yeah, go ahead. Mean right away. Right. So again, this is, I don't know whether he's saying the full story, but he's definitely addressing, you know, what do we need this tshuva of the Rinnegash for? right? And why we need him to say, you give, what is that? You get, you give. All right? However we said it the other day, right? You get, you give. The answer is Rebbe Gash is saying it's not you get, you give, because this isn't what you're giving in order to get. And, you know, you're getting really before you give. So it's just an understanding, you know, that nichale, that he's really serious about it, you know, and that therefore the commitment is made in a way that what you get isn't the konah, of course, because that's just the agreement between you. I mean, it's, you know, I have enough at Kazuze, it's a smichas das issue. Like if I say and by the way, you know, at some point you have to give me $100, or you have to give me $100, you know, within the hour or within the month or whatever it is. So the $100 is not the davar hakonah. The $100 is it's more than a tanai. That's an interesting question. It's part of the smichas das. You know. But it isn't the davar hakonah. So on the other hand, that's really, you know, from a das point of view, if you weren't getting the $100, you weren't going to do this. So how do you get gemuras das, you know, when you haven't yet exchanged and it isn't, the exchange isn't the davar hakonah? That's what the Rebbe Gash is trying to explain, you know, with the verbose formulation of the Gemara. That's very important. Anyways, so once that is true, of course, then to say something, you could say that the argument between Rav and Levi, you know, is a fundamental argument about the nature of Kinyan Sudar, and you could say that in both directions. Let's say, ironically, the verbose formulation is Rav's. Levi is just the objectively, you know, more difficult, you know, more, you know, anomalous fact. You know, that Caleb shall mock, and the whole discussion of the Gemara about reverse agav and so on and so forth. So, you know, if you wanted to be objective about it, so Rav seems like a more typical Kinyan and Levi is unusual. And if you wanted to be, you know, textual about it, you know, it's you could, you know, then just simply have to deal with the Adam Chashuv fallout and all that, and the Kol Shekein question, you could say, oh, actually Levi, you know, it looks worse, but once you get the explanation, you know, that's kesef, that's hana, it's the equivalent of kesef, miad. But Rav, you know, you still have that, you know, triply long, articulation to deal with. So, or you could just say that there's no fundamental argument between Rav and Levi. They both agree about the nature of Kinyan Sudar. They're really just trying to figure out, like, is it better to do that, you know, if you want to take my explanation about the framework of Kinyan, which elevates it beyond kind of just, you know, hischaibus and dibor. So then, you know, is it better to do that through a boomerang? You know, even though it isn't the exchange, not the exchange, you know. Or is it better to do it, like, in the same direction? Like I'm in the machna mode. I start the machna mode, you know, with a small matana. Maybe even a kinyan menas lahaknos. We'll get to that in a minute, the Gemara Nadarim. You know, and then I that paves the way, you know, for the more substantial, you know, act of hakna. So I do more like a teeny traditional hakna to kind of establish the framework. I'll use that word because I like it. And then you know, once I'm in that framework, I can do it through das. You know. Okay. So that is that's a sugya in Bat Metzia, and then we discuss the Gemara in Kiddushin. Daf Gimel and Rashi and Tosus, and I think I mentioned the Tosus Rid and the Ran and the Rajba and Shavuos about you know, what the Havamina was about Kiddushin, very important, what the Maskana is regarding Kiddushin, and of course the role of Kli, you know, is Kli is Nayu B'Kli Pachos Mishaba Pruta, and what, whether that's kind of a technicality or something which again characterizes Kinyan Sudar in a very unusual way. I think that's the next thing that we did. And then how that fits in also with the Gemara in Kiddushin above the base, about the relationship to Matana Menasla Haksir, which we'll get back to in terms of the Gemara Nadarim's connection to Kni Almanas Lahaknos, which we haven't done yet. The Gemara Nadarim Chasam Beis. And from there, I think we discussed the question of Katan and Eved and the debate between the Rambam and the Ravid. The Rambam, restricting the effectiveness of Kinyan Sudar in the case of Katan and Eved, and the Ravid arguing, not just arguing on the facts, but also weighing in, Kesef, Harehu Kekinyan, or Kesef, again, the different formulations in Hilchos Avadim and in Hilchos Mechira, Perikov Tes, that itself kind of showing you that the Ravid is playing with this, meaning he's definitely in the direction of kind of mainstream Kinyan Sudar, but exactly, is it exactly Kesef? And then again, because it's not value wise, so is it kind of barter, or it's not even that? What exactly does the Ravid have in mind? We'll get to the other Ravid in just a second. And I think the last thing that we were discussing was the Rambam trying to explain that one of the reasons that Katan is excluded from Kinyan Sudar is because Ein Oedim Chos Mimal Shtar Shel Katan, right? And the very fact that Sudar, produces a shtar or bishtar is significant. So I think we were talking about the line and the... Did anybody find it in the end? I forgot to look. But the Nosa Kalim definitely asked this question. They say, what is this connection? Even though Kinyan, Stam Kinyan Leksiva Omed, right, Omed Lishnayim, if the Edom are present, they can convert it into a shtar. So just because there's no shtar for a katan, why does that mean that there's no Kinyan Sudar for a katan? It's almost like saying that, Kinyan Sudar is a victim of its expanded, power. Right? Again, it gets into the whole Kula and Chumra issue. Again, we're saying what? A Kinyan Sudar is such a powerful Kinyan that it automatically converts into a contract, which is not true for Mashiach and Chazaka and Kesef and so on, right? Because producing a contract is consequential, right? You can't just assume that. You need separate a separate Sivu Yabal, for that. People don't want contracts out there, that empower, the other party, etc. Whether it's in terms of shibudim or shtar kav yadim my boy, etc. So Kinyan has this greater scope, this greater forcefulness that it can convert into a shtar. So we're saying therefore it doesn't work for a katan. Like, what does that even mean? Right? Meaning, just why not just say that we have a katan and do a kinyan, so there's no din of conversion to shtar. Not because the kinyan sudar is in any way limited, but because there's a separate halacha of ein ha'edim kosmim al el al shtar shalom gadol. So in this particular case, it would convert. That's a great question. Right. So again, if you have the girsa of the Shulchan Aruch, Shaha Kinyan Kishtar, so that solves that part of the problem, right? But it raises another one, and that is like, who told you that, and how do you know that, and why should you think that? Right? At least the part about Ein Ha'edim Chosmim Al Shtar Shalom Katan, or El Al Shtar Shalom Gadol, that we know where that comes from. Okay, the problem is, so this extra benefit of Kinyan Sudar doesn't apply in this case, the extra benefit doesn't apply, therefore the whole Kinyan Suda doesn't apply. Or because the extra benefit doesn't apply, the whole Kinyan Suda, that's the problem. If you say the Kir, like where did that Kir come from? Right? What's the source of the Kir? The fact that it converts into a Kinyan Shtar. Just because something converts into something else means it has all the, you know, exact, you know, limitations or characteristics of it? Certainly not if you think, you know, that, you know, Sam Kinyan Lexiva Omeid is a kind of an umdana. Right? Say, oh, the ubiquity of it, whatever of it. You know, so if there's some more pragmatic explanation why Kinyan Sudar is singular in being able to convert into a shtar, right? So, you know, why should you say either ke, or that the inability to take the whole package, you know, undercuts, you know, the dominant part of the package? Why would you say that? So whether you have the girsa of the Shulchan Aruch or you have the girsa of the Rambam, and there is, as far as I know, in the Kisseyan, the Rambam, not my area of expertise, but I was just looking around, you know, in the Frankel and so on, as far as I know, the girsa, there's no girsa like the girsa of the Kesa Mishnah, but like the girsa of the Shulchan Aruch, it came about because there was an intellectual difficulty with what the Rambam says. Okay. But at the end of the day, if you accept, you know, what I'm suggesting, you know, it ends up being two sides of the same coin. It's the same thing. Okay. And what it is I'm suggesting is that, at least for the Rambam, right, Stam Kinyan Lexiva Omeid, right, itself is not an umdana. It is, right, a fundamental characterization of Kinyan Sudar. And therefore, yes, if you can't do it all, you can't do any of it, you know, not because it's all or nothing, but because the reason you can't do it, if the reason you can't do it all, you know, is not a coincidence of Ein Adam Chosem Al Shtar Shel Adam Gadol. What we're saying is Ein Adam Chosem Al Shtar Shel Adam Gadol, right? And Kinyan converts into Shtar, which means that, you know, the level of Dasa Mischayev, you know, that is common to both, right, is not suitable for a katan. So yes, the expansiveness of Kinyan Sudar, namely the fact that it's a more pure Dasa Mischayev, that itself does, you know, have, you know, Kulas, you can call it. It turns into a shtar. And chumras, it won't apply to a kata. For the same reason a shtar won't apply to a kata. Now, why is a shtar, you know, connected to Kinyan Sudar? And why is it Dasam Schaib? I think the yeshiva is supposed to only get in next year or not. Yeah. I know we pushed it off a couple of years. So I'll expand on that much more next year, but for those who are here. But the bigger idea is that the very institution of a shtar is very extraordinary. You write a shtar, you know, according to the tzibui of the Das HaMischayev, of the Mischayev, right? And the shtar is typically produced in advance of the Kinyan. It doesn't have to be that way, but it can be that way. That's all that matters, right? In other words, you know, we paskin a day. You know, there's an argument to Rav Lazar and Rav Meir, of course, with Edech Hasima Karsi, Edech Mesira Karsi, Edech Hasima Karsi, but in most things, anyways, we paskin Edech Hasima Karsi, and what that means is that the shtar is produced, the shtar which is effective is produced in advance, or can be, of the actual Kinyan. Right? How does it work? Right, so this is something to discuss more next year, but and later maybe the second semester we talk a little bit more about some, you know, Kinyan Shtar things. But how it produces how it works is that if the shtar is yotze tachas yad of the other fellow, then the assumption is, but it's not just an umdana assumption, according to many. Certainly this is many Rishonim, and this is again Reb Chaim's big mahalach in shtaros, is that in the hands of the tofes hashtar, right, the edim shebishtar, who physically, you know, did not have to be present at the actual critical moment of the kinyan, are nonetheless made, we could say, hakol behechsher nasa, you know, that what likely took place here was the kinyan. So let's say a shtar gerushin, or a shtar kiddushin, or a shtar milva, right, can be produced by the mischayev by having edim present when he commits, right, to this course of action. So let's say, the Baal produces a get, or the Baal produces a shtar, and it's nechtam al yedei shnei edim. Okay, the isha is not even in the room at that time. She could be, she doesn't have to be. That's the din. Kosvim shtar, lemalva afapi, lelova afapi shena malva imo, kosvim, lebal, etc. So, but when the isha, comes to court with a get, or with a shtar kiddushin, or the malva comes to court, with a shtar halva, right? So the edim and the shtar, right, are halachically perceived, right, as being made that the transaction took place. The gittin took place. The kiddushin took place. The halva took place. Now, how much of that is umdana, how much of that is edus, that's the big issue, the big question. Okay. So, but how does that work? I mean, it's just a very extraordinary thing, very remarkable thing. We'll talk much more about it. That's part of the story. And the other part of the story is, the broader issue of mipiyam v'lo mipi ksava. Al pi shnayim edim, right? Mipiyam v'lo mipi ksava. So, of course, this is a very famous discussion, one of the most halachically significant Rashi's ala Torah. Rashi says that if you're kosev, shtar edif, if edim write a shtar and then they send it in, that's good. It doesn't work. So, mepiyam below mepi ksava. Rabbi Tam has a different take on that. In Tosas and Yavamos, and Tosas and Ksuvis. Again, not for now. Tosas Bav Basra, Kesabatim, not for now. But the point is, just to use the language of the Balamar, which I mentioned the other day, Balamar says, yeah, mipiyam velo mipiksava. But, mipiv works, just not mipihem. I mean, the edim cannot produce a shtar, what we call, in contemporary, American law, a deposition. Right. Oh, I was present when this, took place, and writing up the testimony and sending it in. According to Rashi, that's a violation of the principle of mipiyam below mipi ksava. Edus bishtar per se is, or edus biksav, we'll call it, is not an accepted testimony. The Rebbeinu Tam disagrees, has a different take. But so this is the big, million-dollar question. If edus biksav is not effective, so then what is a shtar? And how come a shtar is effective? We use a shtar for edus all the time. There are edim and a shtar. And not only that, but the edus of a shtar are far more impactful, in many respects, than the living, breathing edim who signed, could ever have been. Based on the principle of Reish Lakish. I'm sorry I'm going so quickly, but I just want to get this, I don't want to get too bogged down with this, but this is like the short part of the story. And that is the idea of Edim Achasum in Bishtar, right? Nasa Kimi Shenechtera Edusam Bebezdim. That's Reish Lakish's signature, description of a shtar. What did that even mean? Edom achatsumim al ashtar. They signed, like I said before, you know, they could have signed, and that's all we care about. It doesn't matter when they actually signed. As long as they could have signed before the big event, the critical moment took place, right? How could they be kamisha nechkarei dusa bebezdin? Right? And, you know, we read all sorts of things into the shtar based on the say-so of the tofes hashtar, the isha, the malva, you know, etc., the mocher, you know, they make these grandiose, you know, claims, you know, in the name of the Edom Shebishtar. Like, if you go hunt those people down, you find them, like, you know, they weren't even, they didn't see the halva, they didn't see the get, they didn't have to see the get. Again, they might have, that would be a coincidence. They didn't see the kiddushin, you know, what do they know? And yet we say, Edom Achsum al-Ashtar Nasa Kimi Shenechver Edusim Bebezdin? Right? Hakol Behech Shonasa. They're gedolim. They're not. Mizuyafim. They're, you know. It wasn't just a shtar amana. You know, they don't know anything. You track them down. You interview them. It's like such a disappointment. You know, they don't have to be alive. You know. So it can't be made after Misa, right? So the answer is, the short part of the answer, and that's what Reish Lakish is saying, and that's what these dinim are establishing, is that in a certain respect, the way that Edusha B'Shtar works, the way that a shtar works, is what, that's what the Baal HaMor says. It's mipiyam v'lo mipiksamam, but mipiv works, or the way Baal HaTosa say it, the das ha-mischayiv is what creates a shtar. It's like a blank check of Edus. Not completely blank. Okay? Again, umdeno'os have to kick in and kind of, you know, you have to be saying reasonable things, you know, in the name of the Edom Shebishtar, for the Edom Shebishtar Reish Lakish wise to work. Okay? But if you are, and you do, then until we know otherwise, you know, that's Edus. Again, if two other physical, real, living, breathing Edom come along, I say that never happened. By the way, that's not Trey. We believe the living, breathing ones. What we say is, the Umdenaos or the Reish Lakish Din doesn't apply in this case because it's been established. But until we know that, it's Edus. Shtar is a fascinating instrument. When the Rav used to want to sometimes, like, you know, characterize, you know, Reb Chaim's, contribution, you know, and his, revolutionary, let's say, rethinking of certain things. Well, you know, favorite examples would be shtars. You say, Reb Chaim turned, like, you know, a shtar from a piece of paper, you know, into this magnificent legal instrument. You know, he also said that, you know, he turned the, you know, Yoredeya from pots and pans into, you know, abstract ideas. But the truth is that, you know, this is one of, like, the main, Reb Chaim really kind of crystallized a lot of these issues. But they have roots, very strong roots, again, in the Shakta Vatarias and especially in some of the Rishonim Shitos. And in earlier, as any legitimate, you know, mahalach, you know, would need to, just that the accentuation of it matters a lot. So, what does all this have to do with us? So this is the common denominator between Kinyan Sudar, or a perspective on it. I'm not saying all the Shonim agree, between Kinyan Sudar, which is not a ma'isa b'guf adavar. Right? And it's not even quid pro quo at all. You know, it's a mechanism almost like to take something from not being kinyan dvarim or dvarim, you know, to turn it into to make the gemiras das, you know, legal gemiras das. So a way to say that is, you know, you need a higher level of commitment, but it's because it's a kinyan through commitment. So we'll just use this expression because it's convenient. That's how B'chaim is to say it, is that, you know, for most kinyanim you need haskama or ratzon or das makne. And for kinyan sudar, you kind of need das ha-mischayim. Das ha-mischayim is what you need in shtar also, because you're kind of, when you produce a shtar, right, the bala shtar, the mischayim in the shtar, is really putting himself out on a limb. Because in the hands of the tofes ashtar, this is like an incredibly transcendently powerful instrument. Like the shtar is going to tell you not only that the transaction took place when the living, breathing witnesses never saw it, but even more than that, the shtar is going to say, shtar chavyani, my boy, you know, lava velo para until we know otherwise. Right? Or you think, you know, that the Edim are maybe, you think that the signatures are forged, right? The shtar is going to tell you that they're not, like a self-validating mechanism. So when you produce that, of course, there's a little bit of a catch-22 in it all, like you're claiming it's not even a good shtar. So that's a question. But especially once you agree that a shtar's origins are authentic and that the Edim are, you know, truly people, and that their signatures are authentic. So in a way, it's kind of like a blank check. You've been mischayev to the consequences of creating this powerful instrument and allowing for its placement, you know, in your protagonist, you know, in this transaction. So that is the pshat, according to the Rambam, probably, and others, of Stam Kinyan Liksiva Omeid. Oh. In other words, the common denominator of Kinyan Sudar and Kinyan Shtar is what allows for the automatic conversion from one to the other. So then, what the Rambam's saying is, you know, and now you can put, as far as I'm concerned, you know, this, either the Kesef Mishnah or the Girsa that we have. I mean, the Kesef Mishnah Girsa. I'm sorry, Kesef Mishnah. I keep calling. I mean, the you know, Shulchan Aruch, which is the Kesef Mishnah, but he doesn't have the Girsa in the Kesef Mishnah. He just quotes it that way in Shulchan Aruch. But Shaha Kinyan Harehu Kishtar, right? The Ein Chosmim, a katan cannot produce, you know, a shtar. Because he doesn't have that capacity of das mischayev. Maybe he has das makna. He can have ratzon v'haskam. But he can't commit to the blank check. So we're saying, yeah, huadin, a pure gemiras das oriented kinyan requires a certain capacity of das that a katan doesn't have. So that's what we mean. A kinyan harehu ki shtar the in chosmim al shtar shol elishol al shtar shol adam god. And if you have the girsa on the Rambam, I think it's also perfectly good. That's what we're saying. The Rambam's saying shakinyan harehu bishtar, meaning stam kinyan l'ksiva omei. And the only reason that that's true is not as pure umdana, but because of the common denominator, you know, stature of required das and mischayev. So for the same reason, it's not that, oh, you can't have the package, so then you can't have anything. It is, actually. I'm just going to take a short answer. Right. Right. It's not like a Xeris Akasu, if you can't produce the shtar, you can't have the Kinyan Sudar. It's a, if you can't produce the shtar, you know, it's an indication that you don't have the wherewithal, you know, which is the foundation for this Kinyan Sudar. And therefore, you have this particular. Okay, I'm going to have to stop here because I have to run to a Kolel thing. So let's finish off all this on Monday. It's the same idea, basically, but I want to talk about a little bit more you know, the Ramban issue that Tosis and Ramban discuss is, let's say, for example, the relationship between Kinyan Sudar and Shtar, let's say he refuses. Let's say he says, and don't write a Shtar. Can he be Chozer on the Shtar part? Okay. If it's an Umd, then the answer is a no-brainer, of course. If it's, that the level of Das required for a Shtar is contained already in the Kinyan of Kinyan Sudar, I think it's an open question. Then that's one issue. The second issue, of course, that the Bali Tosis raised, and that's where the Raibid comes in, is the question of, do you need Eide Kiyum for Kinyan Sudar, and why would you? Okay. And then I want to speak very briefly about Chazara in Kinyanim in general, but especially the paradigm of Kinyan Sudar. That's the Gemara in Kuf Yudalid. And then also very briefly about the Gemara Nadarim Kinyan Manas Lahaknos, and also Kolsa Kinyano. And then we want to move our back to Shudfin. I just want to look at, if you could look at Reb Chaim and Hilchos Shchenim, that would be helpful as well. I really have to run, but just one second. Reb Chaim and Hilchos Shchenim, Perek Beis Halacha Yud Aleph, and the Ramban in Kiddushin Chav Ches, Omid Aleph, and then, we have some Chazaka things. So we'll try to do that. And then I'll give you Mar Makomos on Monday for the Beis HaKnesses topic on Gimel Amid Beis, Rashi Tosis the Rush, Simon Dalid, Hagosa Shri, the Ran and Megillah Dap Chesam and Aleph, the Ramah here. I'll give you, specifically, but we're going to move on much more quickly now, to the, a couple of other sugyas in the first paragraph. We still have to do a little fikach as well. Okay, so we have ambitious agenda.